Thank you very much, Dr. Allison, for your kind introduction, and thank you for coming to this talk on Pope Francis, Roman Catholic theology, and challenges and opportunities for church planting in majority Catholic contexts. Nuntiu vobis, gaudium magnum, habemus papam. At this point, you might ask if you are in the right place. But this was the announcement that was made on the 13th of March when Pope Jorge Bergoglio was elected, choosing the name of Francis. No one in the Curia will ever say that Benedict the 16th reign was a failure. Benedict was the previous pope than Francis. Yet the impression is that the election of Pope Bergoglio is an implicit admission that the previous papacy achieved less than what that was expected, especially as far as the main point of its agenda was concerned, that is, the relationship with the secular West. After 8 years of Benedict's reign, the secular West has become more distant from the Church and critical of it. Moreover, the curial church has given the poorest performance in terms of lack of Christian standards. The church, therefore, the Catholic Church, needed a different pope. Between the traditional yet secularized West and the vibrant yet still young global South, the conclave has chosen the classical middle way. Pope Bergoglio Francis is an Argentinian born of an Italian family. He is a Latin American, but with a European background. He embodies the transition between the Western establishment and the Southern fervor. Perhaps the conclave thought that choosing an African pope or an Asian pope would have been a too long and unwarranted stretch. On the other hand, sticking to another European pope would have been too much of a geopolitical conservative move that the Church could not bear. Pope Bergoglio is an in-between figure, different but not strange, similar but not a replica. He is also a transitional figure in terms of his age. He is now 67. He is not a young pope with the expectation of a long papacy. Neither is he an old pope with not too much time in front of him. His papacy will test the willingness of the Church of Rome to move beyond the standstill position of recent years, but perhaps it will not have enough time to see changes implemented. The conclave last year did not commit the Catholic Church to a long papacy, like that of John Paul II, but has instead opted to keep the future in sight, waiting to see how this papacy will unfold. All the while, the hierarchy will retain the right to make changes if they deem it necessary. Pope Bergoglio, Francis, is presented as an outsider, but in fact he is not. Supported by Cardinal Martini, Bergoglio himself was the runner-up in the 2005 conclave, the one in which Ratzinger became Benedict XVI. He is well known to the cardinals and was apparently considered reliable by the conclave. In the top list of candidates prior to the conclave was the Brazilian Cardinal Shearer, another transitional figure, but Bergoglio was chosen. He is integrated but not organic to the curial world. The name chosen by Bergoglio is Francis. He mentioned that Francis is a reference to Francis of Assisi, the medieval saint. The international press put a lot of stress on this Franciscan symbolism and apparently liked it. Apparently, he will combine the Jesuit wit with the emphasis on poverty and frugality. The choice has to do with the willingness to mark an apologetic transition in dealing with the modern world. Ratzinger, the previous pope, addressed the modern world by lecturing to it as a professor. But the West doesn't like detached top-down teachers nowadays. Ratzinger argued his positions in a very clever and intellectual way, but the West seems to be looking more to celebrities who can ignite imagination. Ratzinger denounced the moral relativism of our day, but the West doesn't like people who do not practice the political correctness of accepting everything. Ratzinger's strategy ended up in a standstill. Pope Francis instead began his papacy with a very different apologetic style. Approachable, normal, ordinary, he likes to be with the people. He likes to speak the language of the people and make his message very simple. Ratzinger stressed faith and reason. Francis is likely to stress mercy and simplicity. Ratzinger addressed the West as a theologian. Francis is likely to underline the common humanity of all. The difference is significant. Will the church then become poor and meek, Franciscan, so to speak? Will it give priority to a simpler lifestyle? Will it put a stronger emphasis on its spiritual tasks rather than its secular interests? We don't know. One thing is to be remembered. Francis of Assisi did not want to reform the whole church, but wished to receive from the official church the right for his circle of friends to live in poverty. He wanted a niche to pursue his evangelical ideas, leaving untouched the apparatus of the imperial church. The church of his time readily gave him what he wanted because she didn't feel threatened by him. We will see whether Pope Francis will transition evangelical poverty from being a niche of a few idealists to being the standard of the worldwide church. A final thought needs to be addressed about the significance of the choice of Pope Francis as the present pope, and has to do with the geopolitical significance of his election. Pope Bergoglio comes from a country, Argentina, where in recent decades the secular status quo that saw Roman Catholicism being the dominant religion has been shaken by the growth of evangelical churches and the spread of new religious movements of various kinds. This phenomenon designed a new spiritual geography of the country and of the continent, subcontinent. The same can be said for other Latin American countries. It is interesting that the Catholic Church chose a pope from Latin America, giving him the task of monitoring and presiding over this continental religious border that has become fluid, if not weak, as far as Roman Catholicism is concerned. The traditional response to the numerical growth of evangelicals in Latin America has been labeling them as sects or cults. But this derogatory approach did not stop millions of people to leave the Catholic Church. Now, the Pope himself will be directly involved in rescuing the continent. Something important is taking place in Latin America, and the risk of losing the continent was considered in need of being addressed at the highest level. Comments from the international press after his election have been very generous, if not enthusiastic, so far. Francis's image was perceived as real, down-to-earth, personal, non-presuming, very different from the regal arrogance of more traditional popes. His references to the care of the environment, poverty, and tenderness were highly praised and understood as being very politically correct. His insistence on mercy was understood as an open door to different sexual lifestyles and moral choices. One of his most famous phrases is a question that was posed to him coming back from his trip to Brazil, and the journalist asking a comment on homosexuality and homosexual people, and Francis replied, "Who am I to judge?" That is what the West likes about Pope Francis. His willingness to intermingle with people and his relaxed behavior as far as protocols are concerned were seen as proofs of his desire to be identified with normal people and with ordinary life. The West saw in Pope Francis a herald of a soft gospel of compassion and mercy, not of doctrine and convictions. Comments from the evangelical world were also marked by a honeymoon attitude. Official statements and the social networks sent out enthusiastic reactions to his election. He was named Man of God, Friend of Jesus, Man of Prayer. These were some of the most common remarks. Francis was also acclaimed as the new national or even continental hero to be proud of, the new sports celebrity, the new spiritual celebrity of the day. We have to remind that the same day that he was elected, the first act as a pope was to go and pray Mary in the Basilica of St. Mary Major, and committing his papacy to Mary himself, asking her guidance and protection. With all due respect, the idea of a Christ-centered man of God praying to Mary and the saints, bowing in front of an icon and committing himself and his audience to the care of Mary, is difficult to accept from an evangelical point of view. But this is exactly what Pope Francis did on the first day of his papacy. No one is denying the deep spirituality of Francis or his godly devotion. The problem is that we have to be aware of the whole picture of what he represents and what he does as a pope. In order to assess the papacy and the office and the actions of a pope, personal relationships and personal acquaintances are important, but not enough. Biblical discernment is bigger than personal relationships, and it calls for theological awareness, historical alertness, and spiritual vigilance. I now turn to a brief assessment of the only document that so far Francis has produced as far as his magisterial contribution to the church, and it has to do with mission and more broadly with church development and church planting, so to speak. Last fall, Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel, was issued by Pope Francis as an apostolic letter following the Synod of Bishops that the previous year was celebrated in Rome on the topic of the new evangelization. Pope Francis likes to speak about mission rather than new evangelization. He likes the word mission rather than speaking about the new evangelization. The former, new evangelization, attempts at reaching the unpracticing Catholics. The latter, mission, is for him a style of the whole church going in all directions. The former, the new evangelization, is particularly relevant for the ever more secular West. The latter, mission, is a Catholic agenda for the world. According to the Pope, in this document, missionary outreach is paradigmatic to all the church's activity. Evangelization is part of mission, but mission is bigger than evangelization. And therefore, here is what Pope Francis says in a programmatic statement of the document. The church cannot afford to stay in a, quote, simple maintenance mode. she needs to be in a, quote, permanent state of mission, end of quote. Going out, being always engaged in involving others, and being constantly focused on reaching out. Maintenance culture and self-referential attitudes are the internal enemies that Francis is willing to fight. The vision of the Pope is an outward one, and mission, whatever it may mean, and we will see some of its meanings, is at the center of it. His church will not be on the defensive, but will be proactively engaged in promoting its vision. In calling others to change, the Pope is also aware of the need for the papacy to be converted. This is the word that he uses. And he goes as far as saying that there is a need for a conversion of the papacy. For those who may wonder what this expression means, this conversion doesn't entail a deconstruction of the dogmatic outlook of the papacy, nor the radical questioning of the papal claims about the Petrine office. It has to do more with how the Vatican bureaucracy functions than with the doctrinal substance of the papacy. The document, in fact, speaks of decentralization. When it talks about conversion, it associates it to decentralization over against excessive centralization. Or it relates it to the growing role of the episcopal conferences rather than the central Vatican departments. There is no sign of real conversion of the papacy in the biblical sense. It is more a matter of internal church governance than biblical evangelical conversion to the gospel. The document speaks a lot about the joy of the gospel. Joy is the buzzword of the document. It may seem piperian in some respects, but it comes from the pen of the Pope. Joy. Joy is repeated 59 times and is the common theme of the document. The Pope wants to give a joyful flavor to mission. The gospel is also part of the title, the joy of the gospel, but has a lesser role in the document. Joy has a higher and bigger role than the gospel. The heart of the gospel is summarized in this way, and I quote, "The beauty of the saving love of God made manifest in Jesus Christ, who died and rose from the dead." In this apparently evangelical definition of the gospel, something is missing. While the objective good news of God is rightly related to the narrative of Jesus Christ, the subjective part of it, that is, repentance from one's own sin and personal faith, is omitted. The tragedy of being lost without Jesus Christ is also downplayed. For this reason, nowhere in the document are unrepentant unbelievers called to repent and believe in Jesus Christ. On the contrary, non-Catholic Christians are already united to Christ in baptism, according to the document. Jews don't need to convert because they are part of the people of the Alliance, and so already united to God. And with believing Muslims, the way is, quote, dialogue, because, again, quote from the document, together with us, they adore the one and merciful God. Other non-Christians are also justified by the grace of God. This is the expression by the Pope. They are justified by the grace of God, other non-Christian believers, and are associated to the paschal mystery of Jesus Christ, whatever that may mean. The gospel appears not to be the message of salvation from God's judgment, but instead access to a fuller measure of a salvation that is already given to all mankind at different levels. According to the document by the Pope Francis, therefore, mission is the joyful willingness to extend the fullness of grace to the world that is already under grace. You see the difference? The world is already in a state of grace and enjoys it on various levels. And so the mission of the church is not to preach the gospel in order for the world to be saved out of sin, out of death, but is the mission is to preach the gospel of Jesus in order that people who are already in the sphere of grace may come closer to a fuller measure of that grace that can be found in the sacramental life of the Catholic Church. So it's not a matter of being in or out of grace, it's rather a matter of being closer or further from an already given graceful world. Now, we come to the final part of this brief presentation, talking about then challenges that Pope Francis brings to our evangelical task of being heralds and preachers of the gospel and involved in church planting and church development. It's a huge and big topic, but I want to give just three brief remarks in closing my presentation. Pope Francis uses a language that may seem very familiar to all of us. He uses words like mission, gospel, grace, conversion, Jesus, of course, the Bible. These are familiar words. And we have to be aware that same words do not necessarily mean same things. The outward phonetical value of a word may be the same. We say mission in the same way he says so. Mission, maybe with his Latin American accent, or with my Italian accent, or with your American accent. But mission, phonetically, is the same. But what is the meaning of it? Is not the same. Language, in other words, can be equivocal, can mean different things, and can relate to different worlds of meaning. So our task as church planters, theologians, and church people is to exegete the language of the Pope, going beyond mere linguistic similarity by using biblical discernment without being overimpressed by superficial similarities. And in the document I refer to, the word mission is spelled out, and my thesis is that it's spelled out in a way that, although it's the same word that we would use in referring to biblical mission, it relates, on the contrary, to a very different world of meanings. And so we use the same words, but be aware that our exegetical task, our task to exegete a theological language coming from outside of the evangelical world, need an ongoing activity of discernment. Secondly, church planting in majority Catholic contexts is as urgent and necessary as ever. This Pope speaks of mission, speaks of evangelization, speaks of conversion, but the reality is that given the fact that we use same words but we speak different languages, the task before us is as urgent as ever. It is important that in Latin America, in Southern Europe, in the US, and wherever God calls us, we are engaged in planting new churches and developing existing ones, preaching the gospel of Christ, not being pressed by the fact that there are other people, other Christians, that seem to use the same language but do mean different things than what we mean. So it is a burning necessity to continue to be engaged in church planting in majority Catholic contexts, where most people would claim to be religious men, religious women, even Christians, but without having any sense of a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And so our task is as urgent as ever. And finally, we have to relaunch a strong commitment to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And being so centered on the gospel to the point that no political correctness nor ecumenical diplomacy can change our convictions and our stance with regards to the gospel. And if we stay close to the gospel, if we stay faithful to the gospel, we may continue to hope for the expansion of the church, the furthering of the gospel of the kingdom of God. So, nearly 1 year ago, Pope Francis was elected, and we are now in a better position to begin to assess his papacy as the chief, as the Bishop of Rome, the Roman Catholic Bishop of Rome, and the head of the Catholic Church. We are now in a better position beyond the initial positive assessments to begin to see that what he is actually saying may seem similar to what we would say, but is an altogether different world. Thank you very much.